Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome back to yet another edition of the Holtcast. Of course, Cole Pedham here as always, back with another match preview. This time we're not doing an opposition match preview. Unfortunately, we couldn't find a West Ham United fan that it fit their time schedule. But nonetheless, we have a different guest, another Villa fan. He's never been on the Holtcast before. So a special Holtcast welcome to Tom Cowley. Tom, how are you doing?
Yeah, good. Thank you, mate. Thanks for having me on. And looking forward to talking about the game and other things that we've got coming up.
Absolutely. So it's going to be a different kind of a different one to your normal match preview. We're actually going to talk about an interesting Villa-related topic first. It's not positive at all. It's completely negative, in my opinion. And I thought it'd be interesting because Tom is a social media officer for Villa and Proud. That is at Villa and Proud on Twitter. And that topic being that Aston Villa have the most fan-related hate crimes with 13. I don't know if that's just in the Premier League or what kind of span that's across. Maybe that's including all of the EFL as well. But nonetheless, depressingly, Villa topped that. So to kind of break that down, like I said, it's 13 occasions. Seven related to race, five related to sexual orientation, and one related to religion. So it is fair to kind of also say that three other clubs, Wolves, Leeds, and Tottenham, basically are tied for second with 10, but nonetheless, we top that with three more. So Tom, to kind of go over this in some sort of facet, what are your thoughts on that? What does that kind of say to you as a Villa fan and also as a social media officer for Villa and Proud?
There's two elements to it, really, I think. There's the side of you that sort of, you see the headline straight away and you think, you know, oh my God, we're top of this list, this horrendous list that you don't want to be top of at all. But I think it's important to remember as well that it's reports. So you can also look at it as Villa fans, as a fan base, we report hate crimes more than any other fan base. So you can kind of look at it from a point of view of maybe we're the least tolerant of this minority that do exist. But it's impossible to say whether it's that or whether it is that we have more of it that occurs. As we don't know what happens that goes unreported, because I'd imagine 13 in an entire season, although every single incident is horrendous, I'd be shocked if it's anywhere near that low, to be honest, purely from what we see on social media, what you see and hear in the ground. And it takes someone to report it for it to be recorded. So it's quite a difficult thing to kind of analyse.
Oh, absolutely. No, actually, that's a very good point. I, like Tom correctly said, this was for the 1920 season. So thank you for correcting me there, because if it was over, say, a span of 10 years or something, that would actually probably seem pretty good. But yeah, you are completely correct in that aspect. Like, it doesn't specify. No article really goes into detail about how much policing one club does more than another club. So for example, and this isn't accurate, so say if Villa does it the most and say, for example, I don't know, Chelsea does it the least, like you can't really measure to say how bad it is or how well you're doing with policing it as well. It's kind of one of those things where people will look at that number and say, well, clearly they're the most, I guess, negatively publicized club in that aspect. Well, you can say that, but at the same time, is your club policing it as much as our club is? Is our club doing a good enough job as your club? So it's kind of a lot of give or take in that aspect of, yeah, we're going to top this list, but at the end of the day, what is the club doing to kind of remove that? And to be fair to Villa as a football club, we've seen them take action. I think it came out literally that day, if not the next day. And Tom, I'm assuming you may have seen this as well. I think they were looking to press charges or look into these matters sooner. Now, that, of course, that's a typical statement that you'll see from any club. Of course, they have to safeguard their own interests and the reputation and yada, 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 and those aspects. But it's good from kind of a social justice point too, that they're dealing with this in what I believe to be the right way, whether it be banishment, whether it be fines, whether it be whatever they can do to get this out of our game that we love so much. So do you have any more thoughts on it or anything like that?
To be honest, I think you're spot on. You look at things like when we had this song about Nakamba, that some people didn't have a problem with it. Obviously that's why they were singing it, but, you know, instantly people were calling that out. And we saw that recently with someone posted a homophobic tweet that 99% of the replies are people telling them they're wrong. So I think there is definitely cause for optimism, even though we do top this list. And you know, that is why groups like ours exist. We're trying to play our part in empowering the fan base to continue to do this sort of thing and to report any incidents that they have. And if people are empowered to report it, if people want to be allies of those that are victims of this abuse, it can only help. And, you know, eventually, hopefully we get to a stage where everyone feels safe and everyone feels welcome at Villa Park, on social media and anywhere else around the ground.
Oh, 100%. And I think maybe the best way, before we get over to the actual preview of the West Ham game on Monday, I think the best thing for people to keep in mind is that I always hate when people, especially when they go on social media and they'll just take it all as the fan base is rotten. Like, it's a very small majority and every single fan base has it. I honestly don't care what anybody says. There's just that rotten group of every fan base. It's unfortunate, but it's true. You always have the odd, I don't really want to say it, but the odd idiot. It's just, it happens. And whether it's down to how they're brought up or whatever aspect it could be, it's just, it's there. And at some point it becomes the club's job. It becomes, an organization like Villa and Proud's job to try to reduce that as well. So kudos to you guys for doing that. It's a great initiative and it's more than needed. So I'm very glad to see it's out there, but nonetheless, let's move on to something more hopefully positive. And I guess we'll judge that come Monday night. But nonetheless, of course, Villa travel to West Ham on Monday, 8 p.m. kickoff at the London Stadium. Tom, kind of initial thoughts on this. How are you feeling?
I don't know how to feel about it. I really don't. You look at some of the games we played this season, and obviously you look at Arsenal, you look at Liverpool, even the Leicester game, we really ground out a result there. But then there are definitely weaknesses that we've got that I'm not sure whether the players know how to address it or the staff know how to address it, let alone us talking about it now. I don't really know what the problem is, but you know, you look at the Brighton game and we were on top for that first, I don't know what it was, 15-20 minutes before their goal. We were really pushing them, and I was looking at it thinking, if we can score here, this is probably one of the best 20-30 minutes of football I've seen all season. We were really pushing them, but we just couldn't get that final touch. And they're playing so far forward as well. The defence, you know, giving Welbeck so much space behind them. And I think West Ham, with players like Antonio, if he's fit, pushing forward, if we play too high a line, then he could cause us some real problems.
Oh, absolutely. If Holtcast listeners listen to the last episode, which would have been the review on the Brighton game, they know me and Danny were not very happy with the defense. There was no defense on the first goal. The fact that you're like 10, 15 yards inside someone's half is a little concerning. I mean, I feel like from day one, one of the things you learn in any sport is to, with any defenders involved, is to have at least one defender back for cover. I think that exemplifies that rule, but nonetheless, it's an interesting one because Villa sit seventh, West Ham are eighth. They have 4 wins, 2 draws, and 3 losses. We're sitting on 5 wins, 0 draws, interestingly enough, and 3 losses. So 15 points versus 14 points. When you look at this, is this another I feel like we've had this a few times, but do you think this is one of the true matches where we look at it, especially at this point in the season, and say this is a true measure of where we are, especially with how well West Ham is playing right now?
Yeah, 100%. You know, I think we drew 0-0, didn't we, at Villa Park last year, and then we obviously got that 1-1 at the end of the season. And it showed that we struggled to score goals against this West Ham team. You know, they've been playing three at the back recently as well, which I think is going to be hard for us to break down. But if we can come away with a win, hopefully score a couple of goals, then that will show a lot of progress. But I think you look at it and you think if we play as well as we can, we should come away with a win. But it's all about, for me, it's all about Watkins. It's all about giving him the support that he needs. Against three centre-backs, yeah, like I say, he could get a bit isolated. And when without Barkley, it's whoever comes in for him or however we set up with him probably looking like he's missing. It's how those players around him can give Watkins the support he needs, I think.
Yeah, and I think the interesting thing here too, Tom, is that if you look at our away record, we're 3-0. It's... I wouldn't expect that last season, to say the least, but apparently away comforts is the thing this season. I mean, our home record isn't terrible either. I mean, would I like to be a little bit more positive? Of course, but nonetheless, I'll take victories away all the time just as much as home. So nonetheless, points are points. But what are your thoughts on that? Like the whole home versus away aspect? I mean, there's no fans, so I don't really think at this point it really makes a difference in my mind for whether you're home or away, but what are your thoughts on that record so far? Do you think that will come into effect at all on Monday?
Yeah, for me, to be honest, I think it's more of a, you know, you look at the teams that have beat us and they're teams that are probably around the level that we're at, if we're being honest, kind of this mid-table, probably not going to end up challenging for Europe, but not looking like they're getting relegated. And it's almost, for me, I think there's an element of, when we play these big teams, we can counter, we can sit back a little bit deeper and we can catch them on the break and in the transitions. But when we're playing against these mid-table teams that almost you want to go at them, but they've still got the quality that they can hurt you. So I think it's almost just try not to be too complacent. I don't know if it's complacency, not consciously. I don't think they're an arrogant set of players. I think there might just be, yeah, this little element of thinking we can really go at these teams, we can really sit high, we can press them, and maybe just forgetting your defensive responsibilities a little bit.
Yeah, I think, to be honest, I think a little bit of naivety plays into it as well. If you look at the Brighton game, yeah. I think we were so attack-oriented and attack-focused, which... to a neutral, it's great to see. I mean, no defending and lots of goals and shots and all that kind of stuff. I mean, there wasn't that many in the Brighton game, but a lot of attacking intent is great for the neutral, very hard on the heart for the opposing fans of either side. But like it's going to be interesting. You'd think, and I'd hope, that you go into this game after the Brighton game thinking, okay, there's things we have to work on defensively. We can't go on all guns blazing, I should say. Like at some point, and my biggest fear, and I've talked about this a few times on this podcast, was I hope, and I mean, it's not the worst thing because it's the one thing we just couldn't do until we came against Arsenal at the very end to basically save us, was I hope we're not just turning up against the quote unquote top six. And I that's my biggest fear this season, because of course you can look at the Liverpool game, you can look at the Arsenal game, you can look at the Leicester game as well with how well they're doing and how well they have been doing over the last several seasons and think, okay, those are great results. My biggest fear is you're looking at the Brighton game, you can even go back to the Sheffield United game, the very start of the season, the first game, and think we just scraped that through with a bit of luck too. And I don't mind scraping results and it's part of the game and all that kind of stuff, but I'm just hoping we're not going to just drop points when we do expect it. Now, I'm not saying to expect anything against West Ham. Like I said, they're doing very well. They're on a 2-game win streak, and fair enough to them. I think their last two results, albeit I think it was Fulham and Sheffield United, perhaps. Do my research there, but nonetheless, those were both 1-0. So they can easily grind out results. We've seen that. Of course, David Moyes doesn't really like to score that many goals historically. So you kind of get into that aspect too. But Tom, let's get on to the kind of Ross Barkley aspect, because it is a massive loss. And we've kind of seen him have these similar injuries in his career. And of course, he's expected to miss this game, and I think the Newcastle United game next week as well. But nonetheless, in your mind, how big of a loss is this?
Yeah, it's a massive loss, isn't it? I think, and more because of what he offers in terms of taking the pressure off Jack. I think it's not even specifically just him as a player, but it's him, his unpredictability. He can run at defenders. He can create a chance where it means that defenders can't double up on Jack. They can't focus too much on him because Barkley will get given the space. And I think that's where we're going to lose an element in the attack. We're going to lose that unpredictability a little bit. And, you know, hopefully his injury is not that serious because, like you say, he's been injured a few times in his career. And I know sometimes a hamstring, you know, if you're not careful, you can really cause some problems. You can pull it again and again. It can become a bit of a weak point. And, yeah, I think what concerns me more than anything is I don't, you know, he's actually been injured after both international breaks, I think it is. Correct me if I'm wrong. But, you know, and I think he's not been anywhere. He's been at the club. He's been training. And especially this time, to pull up after a couple of minutes, that is a little bit of a worry for me. And, yeah, whether I don't know if he was cold or what the problem was. But, you know, if it's fatigue, you can kind of understand it. But, I'm a little bit concerned, to be honest.
Yeah, and I think the interesting thing, too, is there, and you touched on it very well, was that he does alleviate a lot of pressure from Jack Grealish. And I think the other thing, too, is that a lot of people don't mention is I honestly love the trio of Grealish, Barkley, and how Target overlaps with both of those so well. I think if you go to basically any of our wins with those three playing, the amount of space it opens up for any one of those three when they all link up and get involved is like there. If there was a stat out there for the amount of times that's happened, it's probably ridiculous because it's beautiful to watch. And I think that kind of it gives a different aspect too, because I think the biggest question now is, who comes in? Do we change up the formation a little bit? Does Jack come into the middle? Does he stay out wide? Does Hurahan come in or does he stay out? Do you put Traore up? Where do we put these players? But in your mind, Tom, who kind of comes in to replace Barkley?
For me, it's got to be Connor. I've seen a couple of shouts for Jacob Ramsey. I think I'd have him coming off the bench, but I think it's probably a bit too soon for him. But yeah, I think I'd have Connor coming in and maybe even put him next to Louise and push McGinn further forward. I think Jack's better on the left now. I think we've kind of put that to bed to an extent with watching him against Brighton. I know it was difficult circumstances, but I think when he's in the middle, he just drops a bit too deep. He doesn't quite get into these positions where he's so dangerous. And I think the key is you want your best players in your best positions. So I think you'd have Jack on the left. I'd keep Trezeguet on the right. I think that front three probably stays the same. And yeah, just maybe put McGinn in that number, sort of number 10 role, I suppose, but you'd probably be looking at playing a slightly different way. But yeah, I'd have Connor next to Louise.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree with that. I think it's going to be interesting no matter what happens and who replaces them, because if you look at it, like you touch on it very well as well, like, if you're having Jack in the middle, you almost need two of them to make up for how deep he gets back. And I think with how deep he gets back, it just, the amount of time it takes to kind of get everyone forward, it was a major issue last season and it just didn't work. And like, I kind of hate the prototypical thing with a lot of people when they say your wingers have to be basically pure pace and have like, if I'm going to use FIFA terms, have like 90 pace out of 100. He still has a pace on him. He's still quick, but we've also seen that he's powerful. I mean, he literally bodied Bellerin off the ball, and that man is literally full of piss and vinegar when it comes to pace. So it's evident that you don't need that. And I think it's obvious the amount of opportunities and what he can create going off the left. And it's going to kind of be interesting, especially if it's a back three, how much kind of space does that leave him? And in my opinion, I think it's Hurahan that comes in. I mean, the guy was kind of hard done by to be dropped nonetheless. I mean, he scored against Fulham. He had a very good game and then just kind of haven't really seen him since. I mean, to be honest, I thought when he came on in the Brighton game, I was actually very impressed with him. He does the small things right, and I think that's really what you need and have to expect when it's substitution time. But I guess the kind of last thing we'll touch on before we get into score predictions, Tom, is what do we do with Bertrand Traore? What do you think his impact on this game in particular is? Like, we've kind of assessed that when we both agreed that Hurahan starts. So what do you kind of expect from him in this game coming off the bench?
Yeah, he's got to be in the front three for me. Although saying that, I do think he was better for Brighton in the first half against Brighton, when he's playing in that kind of number 10 role. But I think he's more naturally, he's a winger, and he goes on the right-hand side. But it depends again, because for me, he's just too one-footed. I don't want to, you know, do him down, really. I think he is a very skillful, talented player, but he's far too one-footed. And you look at him every time he's getting in a position where he could cross, and he's cutting back onto his left, and kind of the chance is gone. And I actually thought El Ghazi, to be honest, almost remedied that in the Brighton game. But yeah, he's a tricky one. He's unpredictable. I think he's inconsistent though at the minute, and I'm not 100% sure he's that fit at the minute. I think he's just come back off his injury. I'm not sure he's match fit for, obviously, for 90, but off the bench, it's just that small unpredictable change that you can make, that if you need a goal, you never know, he could get it for you.
Yeah, I think when I look at him, and the one thing I hate about it is I want to call him Adama Traore every freaking time. I don't know why, but maybe I'm not over that whole saga yet. But nonetheless, with Bertrand Traore, it's an interesting one, because I look at him and I think, I don't even know if he knows himself what his perfect position is. It's just like he just hasn't figured it out, and I don't think no one has. And it's an interesting one, because by now in your career, you'd think at least the player himself has found that. And he may say he prefers one thing over the other, but nonetheless, barring one season, it just, at Lyon, it just really seems like it hasn't been a consistent thing. And I think that's one thing for him to prove, is consistency. Now, of course, that's going to be a lot of factors, of course, training well, proving yourself there. And then, of course, once you get into the starting 11, proving your placement in that for the continuous future, really. But nonetheless, Tom, we'll kind of get things wrapped up now. So before we end things, what's your score prediction?
Again, it's such a tough one to call. Yeah, I'm going to go 2-1 Villa. Let's be optimistic. I think they will cause us some problems, but if we show up on the day, we should just about have enough.
Yeah, I don't know. When it comes to West Ham, and especially if you look at the results last season, can score 10 men, and that was probably the most boring draw of my life. And then you had the complete opposite end of the spectrum, when it was probably the biggest... I couldn't eat, I couldn't sleep, I couldn't do anything but just wait for that final whistle to go. I'm going to go with a 1-1 draw. I think we get our first draw of the season. I think that's a fair point for either side. And to be honest, I would take it. And I think you kind of go into that with some positivity, hopefully with minimal amount of goals going into Newcastle with a lot more confidence. I'd take a win as well. But realistically, as long as we don't lose, I honestly could not care less. But nonetheless, Tom, before kind of wrap things up, could we get your socials? Do you want to plug anything?
So my Twitter is at tomc2312_AVFC, and Villa and Proud is at Villa and Proud on Twitter, on same as Instagram, I think. But yeah, that's it.
Brilliant. Well, thanks for joining me, of course. And of course, if people want to find me on Twitter, it's at Talk Aston Villa. You can tweet the 7500 to Holt team at 7500 to Holt, simple enough. Email the podcast at holtcast@gmail.com. And of course, we'll see you on, I guess, Tuesday morning. It will be for the review of the West Ham game. Nonetheless, hopefully a positive result on Monday. And don't forget the Villa.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.